Hello, and welcome to the Hello Show from Dave Lawrence and David Kendall.
Hello.
This is officially episode 9, although we're taking some liberties with that, aren't we, David?
Yeah, we recorded episode 8, but as a courtesy to our listeners, the audio quality was so bad that as a courtesy to our listeners, we decided not to make you suffer through it.
I like that. That's a good story. We'll stick with that one.
Yeah.
Because that's not what I've been telling people.
Okay.
All right, so people have been waiting on a picks show from us, and we've kind of condensed it a little bit, but we've got some good stuff for people, right?
Yep, we've got some apps. We did have a lot of other stuff as well, but we're just keeping it at apps for this episode 9. If anybody wants the full list, I have the notes I took, which when we were recording episode 8, and I'll release those on a HTML format sometime.
Right. And those are probably adults only, right?
I seem to remember something about the floating strip club.
Man, that was a great episode.
Yeah, we'll keep that under our hat. Edit this.
Yep.
All right.
Well, why don't you kick us off with your first pick, David?
All right. So, my first pick is, I think, probably a pick of yours as well. It will be Transmit 4. Just came out.
Mm. And you're a fan now.
I'm a fan. I was previously a fan, and in episode 8, I said that I was a fan of Expand Drive. But Transmit 4 has a feature that does the same thing as Expand Drive, but it does it much, much faster. Like, you wouldn't believe how it's... I can actually open a Photoshop file over the network now. That's how fast it is.
Yeah. Now, what's the difference between Expand Drive and Transmit?
Well, Expand Drive is just an app that lets you mount an FTP server on your desktop. It doesn't do anything else. But Transmit also has the old style of Transmit, which has also been slightly redesigned. So it's actually a traditional FTP client as well as a remote disk.
And so you do use this for file transmitting, and hey, maybe that's why they call it that.
Yeah. Well, it was originally called Transit. Did you know that? Somebody threatened to sue, so they changed it. They got a fun bonus M.
There's nothing like a lawsuit.
Yeah. Have you ever read the story of Audion by Cable Sasser?
No, I haven't.
Panic's MP3 editing app. It's on it's on the panic.com website under extras. It's a really good read, and don't skip the links either, because most of them are kind of pop-up footnote windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do a great job with their website. I mean, I'm digging up stuff in there all the time, and their blog is just gorgeous.
Mm.
I mean, I'm all for simplicity, but if you want to go, candy themed, that's the one to go for.
Mm. Like, the tilted paper.
Yeah, that's fun. So Transmit 4, this was just released last week.
Yes, I think Tuesday, was it last week?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just as of this recording, it was 6 days ago.
Right.
This is Monday.
And they did a little preview thing. They did the covered up truck.
Oh,
so you
kind of
knew
that,
what it
yeah.
was going to be.
Hmm.
Yeah, they had the whole countdown thing going. It was a lot of fun.
They must be gutted that Apple Design Awards aren't being given for Mac apps this year.
Yeah, because that would have been a shoo-in.
Yeah. Of which more later.
So now, did you have Transmit 3?
No, I didn't.
You had the OS 9 version.
I had the OS 9 version, which I ran in the Classic, on Donald, but since I've upgraded to Leopard on this new Mac, I got Expand Drive, and then, fortunately, I never actually paid for Expand Drive. I was still in the trial period when Transmit came out.
So you got to use it for free, and then you actually bought a better, faster app.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. That's the way to play them, David.
That was fortuitous.
Right. Okay, well, good pick. And I support it. I bought it, too. I actually upgraded from Transmit 3, so...
All right.
Great app.
Your turn.
Okay, I'm going to go with an online app to start out with. And for those people who follow blogs that run the Decads, you've probably seen this, and it's been all over the place. They do just dynamite web advertising, but it's MailChimp by the Rocket Science Group.
I've heard about this, yeah.
MailChimp is phenomenal. I run a membership database and newsletter program for a local recycling nonprofit here in town. And I've tried out a couple of email programs to send out updates and news and our newsletters and things like that. And a lot of them give nonprofits deals, or they limit your mailing list to like 100 people. MailChimp, they say, you know what, you can have up to 500 people for free, and after that we'll start charging you. And for our little nonprofit, it's perfect because we have, you know, under 200
members.
Right. It's perfect. No, but it even gives us room to grow. If we doubled in size, MailChimp would still be free for us. And that's just the cost benefit for it. Mm-hmm. The other benefit is that it is just about infinitely expandable and customizable. Mm-hmm. Like, you can do anything with, you know, your link colors, your header colors, your header graphics, all this HTML email programs.
Hmm.
And then it, you know, it tracks links and when people open them up and how many bounces you get, and it gets super detailed. But it's one of the first online apps that is actually a joy to use. It's a lot of fun. They do a great job on their UI and their graphics and things like that. It's a hoot. And right now they're running a cool special where if you design a template for them, you can win some money and a wrestling championship belt.
A wrestling championship belt?
Yep. You can be MailChimp champ of the world.
Oh, MailChimp champ. Okay.
Say that 5 times fast.
MailChimp champ, MailChimp champ. Okay.
Right. But if you see the deck ad floating around on one of the blogs that our listeners read, go ahead and click on that link and, give the blogger a little tip in their tip jar.
Yes.
And then check out MailChimp. If you've got, for work or for any volunteer work you do, give it a try because, like I said, up to 500 subscribers for free, you can get a lot of work done.
So that's like Kudo Partners or Daring Fireball or Simple Bits, Textism, all mm-hmm. these blogs that are on the deck. Just click on one of their MailChimp ads when they come around.
Right. And they don't just do the deck. They do a lot of other online advertising, too. But that's the one that I see it most of. And actually, I was so intrigued by it that that's where I clicked on it from and got to learn about it. So their ad worked. It definitely worked.
All right. So,
MailChimp by the Rocket Science Group.
MailChimp.
David?
So my next pick is kind of related to my blog post today. Have you seen my blog post today, Dave? Or
David, I work for a living.
Right. Well, my blog post today, it's titled "I haven't used a word processor in 6 months," or something like that. And it's basically it's about how I use Markdown and LaTeX.
Mm-hmm.
But the easiest way to get LaTeX installed on your Mac is a package called MacTeX. It includes the basic TeXLive distribution, which is the biggest distribution of the TeX typesetting system by Don Knuth. So you get, you know, ZTeX, I don't know. But you get that, so you can use the Unicode, and you get the PDF tech with the micro typography and all that. And then you also get a bunch of really nice GUI applications. So you get TeXShop, which is my main tech editor. You get mm-hmm. a program called BibDesk, which I haven't really looked into yet, but it's apparently for managing your bibliographies. if you're doing like a research paper. And you also get some other... You also get a utility for managing it and some other editors. So it's really, it's actually quite a nice little package for the Mac. It's surprisingly Mac-like. Given that the system started out on, probably I'm guessing, ITS for the PDP, whatever, mini computer in 1980, whatever.
How fun.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of Mac Tech before. That's new to me.
Yeah, well, Tech is kind of like the desktop publishing system from before there was desktop publishing.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You're going old school.
Yeah. So it's, you type in a source file and it pops out a, it's called a DVI file, and then you can convert that to a PostScript or a PDF file.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice. And then can I do a double pick, because I just discovered this one as well?
Sure. Well, where do you find that one?
You can find, I think you just Google it. I don't think there's an official Mac Tech web domain. I think it's part of the Tech Live website. Anyway, that's, I should mention as well that it's spelled T-E-X, not, but it's pronounced Tech.
Oh.
Sorry. You've probably been searching in vain all this.
You know me too well.
So, if I could do a double pick, this is really of interest, if only if you're a musician, but I just discovered, well, I've known about the program for a while, but Lily Pond on the Mac is very nice. You get a very bare bones but quite functional editor, which integrates quite nicely with the Lily Pond music typesetting system. So if you want to typeset some music on the Mac, then I think that's certainly the way to go. And it, again, it's free.
That's neat. So you make music.
Musical scores, yes.
I'll be darned. This looks a little bit lower tech than GarageBand or something, right?
This is sheet music, the scores and printed music.
So you actually have to know what you're doing.
You actually have to know what you're doing. You can't just...
Wow.
Yeah.
Me. Great.
So that was what I was...
I haven't read sheet music in a long time, but I know my bass clef pretty well, so look out.
Oh, yeah, because you mentioned you were a trombone guy.
Back in the day. Sure do.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, two fun geeky picks. My next one is work-related. And I can't believe I didn't pick this one the last time we talked, David, but this one is called Billings.
Billings?
By Market Circle. Billings. Like you send a bill to someone, you're billing them. Billings is by Market Circle. And if you search for Billings for Mac, you'll find it. But it's at marketcircle.com/billings, I believe. But Billings is a time tracking and invoice application for the Mac. And when I started doing a lot of my freelance work last summer, I was looking for an easier way to keep track of my time and send out invoices and things like that. And what I wanted was an application that did it all in one. So I wouldn't have to track my time with one app and then write up invoices in like a text editor or something like that. And I found Billings and I read a lot of reviews and I gave it a try and it was just what I was looking for. Mm. The invoices that it creates are gorgeous. You can customize them, throw your logo on there. They look really professionally done. And it kind of combines with your address book so that you input customers into your address book and then Billings loads them into the system. Mm-hmm. And that's how you keep track of projects and due dates and things like that. And Billings actually won an Apple Design Award. So They have the backing of Apple on this. They also have an iPhone app, which is a kind of a stripped-down version of Billings. It's mainly for time tracking and things like that. And because I'm at my MacBook Pro and I'm working, I don't really need the iPhone app so much. So I haven't tried it out, and I can't speak for it. But I can speak for the Mac version, and it is great. And they send out updates every once in a while, so they're continuing to improve the thing. And I think it's like 30, 40, 50 bucks, something like that. But if you're a professional, or if you're a freelancer, and you want to take a lot of the hard work out of time tracking and invoicing, and even tracking, like if you want to, you know, log all your expenses or log how much money is coming in, it does a lot of that automatically through the invoice system. So it's just shaved hours off of my time as a freelancer, and I can't recommend it highly enough. So Billings from Market Circle.
Right. So I think my next pick will be a little... I don't know what you would call it. It's kind of maybe a background app. Anyway, it's called Sizzling Keys, and it's ostensibly an app that lets you control iTunes through the keyboard. And you might think, well, what use is that? I've got one of these Apple aluminium keyboards with the iTunes controls right on it, or you know, a laptop keyboard with them. But actually, right. It has some useful other features. It's got a thing called a floater, which appears in the bottom left corner of your screen. You know, I think you can change which corner it appears in. And it tells you, whenever you change track or start playing something, it'll tell you what track's playing. And then there's also a feature which is useful if somebody comes in the room and you want to talk to them. It's got a feature called Almost Mute, which you can do through the keyboard. So you've got it on pretty loud. Suddenly it's not on. Some just nice and quietly, so you can still hear it, but it's not interrupting your conversation. And then you just tap the key again, and it goes right back up to the volume it was before.
Ah, that's kind
of
neat.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the most useful features of it. And there's probably a lot of other useful features that I haven't discovered yet, but yeah, it's a really, really nice app, especially I used this when I didn't have this Apple keyboard with the iTunes controls right on it. That was very useful. So if you have a pre-2007 Apple keyboard and you'd like to control iTunes through it, then this is the app you need.
That's neat. I used to use, oh shucks, it's something for Firefox where you can control iTunes in the bottom, you know, the bottom little bar there. But I don't use Firefox so much. Mm. And I click back and forth between iTunes, the little mini player, and whatever I'm working on. So that'd be kind of nice. Mm,
yeah. That's the magic of AppleScript.
Right.
Automation.
Foxy Tunes, that's the thing for Firefox, where you can control it in the bottom section of Firefox.
Yeah. Yeah. iTunes Mini Player. I didn't know about it, actually, until your blog post complaining that it had been removed.
Really? You never hit the plus key?
No. I don't tend to use the zoom button. I just resize the windows myself, because it hardly ever does what I want anymore.
Right. Well, yeah, I never used the zoom key either, except for iTunes.
I mean, I think it worked best when it first came out, I think, on like the System 7 time frame, when it would actually resize the window until the scroll bars were gone, or it would try and, you know, find the optimal size if it couldn't get rid of the scroll bars. But now, if it can't get rid of the scroll bars, it just fills the screen window style, and that's not what I want at all.
Yeah. I think we found out how much people hate the zoom key or the zoom button when iTunes did that.
Yeah.
And it didn't take long for Apple to switch them back.
Mm. Yeah.
So, gosh, what was that? That was like iTunes 9?
That was the first iTunes 9, and then they fixed it like 2 days after your initial complaint about it.
Right, which I'll take full credit for. Yeah. Because I started quite the discussion on that. And for listeners who aren't familiar, iTunes 9, if you hit the zoom, the green button up in the upper left-hand corner of iTunes, before it turned iTunes into the little mini player, the little miniature version. But iTunes 9 broke that. If you hit the zoom key, it actually does what the normal zoom key does. And so I complained enough that I think Apple heard me. I think they took action.
Mm. Well, you know, could be a Newton user working at Apple. Maybe pulled some strings.
Yeah, heartstrings.
Mm.
Pulling heartstrings. Okay. Next up, I'm going to do Text Wrangler from Barebone Software. And Text Wrangler... Light. BB Edit Light.
Well, if you want to pay, you should get BB Edit.
Right. But if you don't, if you're a cheap guy like I am, then you use Text Wrangler. And Text Wrangler replaced BB Edit Light, which was the free version of BB Edit.
Which had John Gruber's name in the email box.
Right. But Bare
Bones. Have you worked out how to invoke that menu yet, Dave?
I have not.
If you go to Text Wrangler, it is in Text Wrangler. Go to the About box.
I'm going to do it right now as you're talking.
The little proxy icon in the About box window, you know that? Next to About Text Wrangler. Either command click on it or left click on it.
It's gone.
See all the names? And yeah. Apparently that Easter egg was put there by Gruber as well.
I'll be darned. Well, it's not there now. But anyway, Text Wrangler is a wonderful text editor because I'm starting to get more into the coding side of websites, HTML, CSS, stuff like that. And I wanted just a simple text editor, but that's flexible enough where I can do some neat stuff. And Text Wrangler was just perfect for me. And like David said, it's free, which so you can't beat the price. And it's got, if you're a coder or a programmer or something like that, you probably use one of the whiz-bang text editors, like TextEdit or BBEdit or something like that. But for simple guys like me, we'll use Text Wrangler from Barebone Software. It's free. And, David, I'm looking for a copy of BBEdit Lite. Do you happen to know where... Is that anywhere to be found
That's
anymore?
The copy I found was on System 7 Heaven. Or System 7 Forever,
okay.
Or whatever it's called.
Basically, right. Because I'd like to get one for some website. Of my...
Right. I can send you... I'd like to get some... file if you want me to send it to you.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Because
I'd like a copy on my OS 9 and lower Macs.
Right.
Okay, so Text Wrangler. I keep saying Text Edit. Text Wrangler from Barebone Software. That's fine.
It's a really, really great piece of software. A Mac veteran, if you could call it that.
Yes.
Edit.
What you got for us, David?
Let's just pull up this here. All right. Since you did one, you did in the last show, I'm going to do one too. Secret Stop Pref Pain. This Secret Stop Pref of Pain is a preference pane that just goes in your system preferences that provides a graphical user interface to all the little macOS 10 hints style defaults diddles you can do. Like you can you can make your dock into the 2D version, or you can enable the list view for stacks in the dock, or I found an option for a simple version of the Finder, which seemed to scarily resemble the iPhone Finder. Each folder you slid from page to page using two buttons at the bottom. It was kind of weird. But there's hundreds of these little preferences that have been put in by Apple. This isn't a haxi that enables these features, you know, surreptitiously. These are actual preferences that have been put in by Apple, but which have not been put in the system preferences.
They're not official.
Some of them don't seem to work. I'll be clear with that now. But those that do can be quite interesting. Like there's a hidden minimization style for the Windows going into the dock, and it's called the Suck, which is kind of a mix of the scale and the genie effect, where the window just shrinks and kind of warps as it's doing so. It's kind of weird.
Hmm.
I've got it on genie because I like it.
And I, after you recommended this last time, I tried it out, and I love the 2D dock. I missed it now that I've got it back.
Oh, I turned it back on. I turned the 2D dock off again because it was all causing all kinds of graphical glitches on the system.
Really? No, mine's been running great.
Yeah, maybe it's just like a core image thing or something. Like my computer
right.
doesn't have it.
And I like the smoky background, the darker background. It makes the icons pop a lot more.
Yeah.
Good recommendation. Where can we find that one?
I don't know. Wait a minute. Let me just find the name. Secret Stop of Pain.
We'll put these all in the show notes, of course, folks,
so
that are listening.
Secrets.blacktree.com.
Ah, yes. Yep. That's a neat little... I haven't dug in there and tried it out very much, but the doc was enough for me to recommend it.
All right. So...
Okay, my next one. Are you all done there, David? I'm sorry.
No, that's I was going to say, right, your next pick. So, go on.
Well, then I will. Thank you so much. I've got... and this is... You know, take this very carefully... And if you do decide to download this app, I want you to dedicate, like, an hour or two of your day each day for this app. Because you're going to get sucked in, and you're not going to be able to let it go. And that app is for the iPhone or iPod Touch. And I hear it's coming for the iPad soon, but it is Doodle Jump.
Dun, dun, dun.
Doodle Jump. By Lima Sky, something like that. Just search for Doodle Jump in iTunes. This game for the iPhone is madness. I have tried lots of recommendations for games on the iPhone, and I've just never been able to get into it. It's, you know, the screen is smaller, the controls always don't always work right. And I'm a big video game guy, but I just cannot get into gaming on the iPhone. And then I saw that Doodle Jump was on sale for 99 cents or something like that one day. And I thought, well, you know, I've heard a lot about this one. I'll try it out. And then, like, I woke up the next day with missing time because Doodle Jump is insanely addictive. It's an arcade game where you're this little four-legged guy and you jump from platform to platform vertically. And there are little monsters to avoid and springs to jump on. And if you fall off one of these, then you die. But it goes on forever. It just keeps going. And so if you die, you start again, and then you want to get higher than you did the time before.
Yeah.
And it does a great job of logging your score so you know how far you've gotten. And then it's like a compulsion. You have to beat that score. You have to get higher than you did before. It's insane. And I lost like 30 pounds playing this game because I didn't have to eat. I had Doodle Jump.
Yeah. I think the worst and most addictive iPhone games are the ones that can, in theory, go on forever, like Doodle Jump or Cannibalt. Like one of the first addictions for iPhone users was Super Monkey Ball, but there were 5 levels, and once you got through all 5, you were done. That was it. But
right.
On these ones, like Doodle Jump, you're just going on forever and ever and ever.
Hypothetically, you could play from here till your battery runs out.
Unless it's got like a kill screen, like Pac-Man.
Right. After a while. But the levels don't change any. It just gets harder as you progress. But what you can do is you can pick the theme of the screen. So you can have like a Christmas theme or a jungle theme. They have a Halloween one. So they all kind of look different, but the game essentially stays the same. You still have the same platforms. And but, you know, in the Christmas one, he wears a little Santa suit. And the Halloween one is kind of cool because he glows in the dark and things are a little harder to see because you can only see him when he's glowing in front of it or whatever. But essentially the game stays the same no matter how you play it. It just looks a little bit different. But, and I don't know what the price is right now. I can look that up. But if you see it for a dollar, man, you grab onto this thing and kiss your family goodbye. Because you, I mean, this is all you're going to be able to do.
Right. I think we should end the picks there. There's nothing else you wanted, needed to say, is there?
Before, you know, for our listeners' sake, we might not... I mean, that's probably all we can do.
Yeah. Episode 8 was about 2 hours long. We don't want to...
Right.
So, right. So that concludes the picks portion of this episode, episode 9.
And we could do this again, right, David? I mean, we've got plenty of stuff we're interested in that we can always offer.
And then all the stuff that we've mentioned in episode 8 but we didn't mention here, we'll post in a blog or whatever to the website.
Right. And we can post it on our respective blogs too.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to find them.
Yeah. So
David, a lot's happened since the last time.
I got a new Mac.
I mean, it's like the world is... Yeah. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, if you remember from the last show, when we recorded that, I'd just been sniped on a Quicksilver PowerMac G4. Then after that, there was a buy it now / best offer, which I found of the exact same model. So I made a best offer, which was about 70% of what they were asking for. And they accepted it, and it was actually pretty close as well, so I went to pick it up instead of having it delivered, which saved the postage cost.
Oh, neat. Yeah.
So I picked it up.
Those aren't light.
Well, one of the caveats of this, the low cost of the Mac was that, and this wasn't in the description, it didn't come with a hard drive. So what I did was, as I am now quite experienced in doing, I pulled Donald apart and pulled his hard drive out and just transplanted it in, booted right away.
Yeah.
Oh, and another...
So you've kind of got a brain that can go back and forth between these Macs.
And another cool thing that Macs can do is, of course, boot in target disk mode. So before I opened Donald, I briefly had the two connected via FireWire. Had Donald in target disk mode and the Power Mac booting from Donald's hard disk while it was still in the computer.
Yeah.
And this new Quicksilver G4 of 733 MHz is called Big Mac.
Big Mac. Now, how do you like it? What are you using it for?
This is my new main machine. So, it feels, in the words of Frank Casanova, it feels wicked fast after 6 months of using a G4.
You mean the G3 iMac?
Even. Yeah, sorry, I get these Gs confused.
Right. And so what kind of monitor are you running from that?
Well, I've got this rubbishy, crappy old Fujitsu Siemens flat panel. 17-inch, 1280 by 1024 resolution. And it's very old, and it's now actually... anything that's displayed on it now seems to be ghosting slightly to the left. I think I need to get a new one.
Oh. It's a bad sign.
Yeah, but it's a luxury to have this much screen real estate after the XGA Power Mac. iMac display.
Right.
It's 11.
And so you've got Leopard on there.
Yes, I upgraded to Leopard using the open firmware hack trickery, which is on the... If you want to find it, it's on the low-end Mac website.
Yeah. And how's it running on that?
It's running great. I can't complain. It's just fine.
That's great. Now, the Quicksilver Power Mac was one of my favorites. In fact, the whole G4 line is probably my favorite.
Yeah, I would argue. I would argue that the G4 era, from when was it 1999 to 2003, was the best time ever in Apple's industrial design history. Ever.
Yep, I agree. Everybody knows I'm a big fan of the iMac G4, but the Power Mac
G4. Because what did you have? You started off with the Power Mac G4, which may as well have been the first non-beige Power Mac that they'd made. I mean, there was the blue and white G3 before it, but I don't think that was ever meant to be a product. I think they were waiting on the G4, but Motorola was just too slow with the development, so they put a G3 in it instead. That's my theory.
Right.
So it started out with the Graphite G4, and then, which was quite simply stunning looking for, you know, 1999, when most professional computers were still beige and boring boxes. And then you moved on, and you had the Titanium PowerBook, which I think is the best looking laptop Apple's ever made. Then you had the G4 Cube, which is the most beautiful computer ever made. Sorry, Dave.
I'll grant you that.
And you had the iMac G4, which was the second most beautiful computer ever made. You might want to reorder that to personal preference.
Right.
And then what else was in that era?
Well, the iBook G4, and the iBooks.
Just that the switch from the clamshell to you had the kind of snowy G3 iBook, which was sort of semi-translucent, and then you went fully just plain white, very minimal, and quite nice as well. The iBook.
It's gorgeous, and it was the first Mac that I purchased. Was the last edition of the iBook G4, which was the 1.42 gigahertz. And the whole line is just great. They're great computers.
Yeah. Great computers.
But yeah, the G4, the Quicksilver you got, was the first Mac that I did professional work on. We had a room full of them in my newspaper office in college. And that was right around the switch from OS 9 to OS 10. And so we got OS 10 on all these brand new Quicksilver Power Macs. And that's really where I became a Mac fan, was right there.
How did that run?
Not so well. I actually almost didn't like the Mac because it crashed so often. We were using Quark Express back then, and which we had to run in classic mode, it crashed constantly.
The first ever, you know these translations that Gruber does from PR speak to English?
Yes.
The first one he ever did was the press release where Quark announced Quark Express 6, which was supposed to run on OS 10. And it's very amusing when you look at it in context.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody besides newspaper offices use Quark anymore. It's just, you don't hear much about them.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like PageMaker. I mean, there's the analogy.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And InDesign is a great page layout program.
I've never used it, but the typographical features of it are just beyond compare to the Quark and is PageMaker still in production?
I think Adobe still sells it, but they don't make it anymore.
All right. Well, InDesign, I think they even bought the program from Herman Zapf, which he had made. Herman Zapf, the type designer and sometimes typesetter, who is an advocate of micro typography, like things like hanging punctuation. Mm-hmm. To understand it. They actually bought a program from him which just produced what was widely regarded as the best looking type. They bought it from him, and that is the core of InDesign.
Right. Yeah, they, believe it or not, they still sell PageMaker. It's up to 7.0 right now, and you can get it for the low price of $499.
Right. And does that run on OS 10?
Which, I'm sure it does.
Well, they were still selling HyperCard until 2004.
That's right.
even though that went in classic.
But boy, to think that they're still charging $500 for PageMaker.
Which idiots are paying that much for such a crappy app?
Well, and, you know, PageMaker's not horrible, but, I mean, $500
I had my mini VMAC running it. It is horrible. It's horrible.
Well, in comparison, if you use InDesign now, it's quite the change.
Mm.
But anyway, if you love PageMaker, you can still get it.
So how did this conversation start? We were talking about your newspaper.
We were talking about Power Macs. But anyway, what are you going to do with this Power Mac? Do you have any big plans for it?
Well, this is my main machine, and it's also a print server for the house. So my printer is connected up to it, and then there's my dad's printer is also connected up to it and shared with his Windows PC.
Mm-hmm.
So, and here's an interesting thing I wanted to talk about, actually. I've got quite a weird USB setup now. The upshot of this is that any printouts that are made actually go through my keyboard. Now, I was thinking, what interesting devices could you pipe a printer output through? Or something else? So, you know those novelty vacuum cleaners, the USB vacuum cleaners?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was thinking if you got one with a USB hub in, I don't know if anybody makes one, but if you got one with a USB hub in, then you'd guaranteed not to get any spilt ink or messy coffee.
Or you could get one of those coffee warmers, to warm up your ink or something.
Yeah, wouldn't need to spend any time just, it does the worry thing and it starts warming up. Have it warmed up in no time at all with like a coffee warmer.
Yes.
Through which its output would be piped.
This sounds like a Tumblr blog to me that you're talking about.
Weird things to pipe through USB.
Yes, your printer port.
So,
how fun.
Yeah. I think we need to.
So anyway, well, congratulations on the Power Mac. Now you're still waiting on an Apple Extended 2 keyboard, right?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like that you can use the iPad camera connector to connect to keyboard, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get my iPad in 6, 10, 12, 18, 24 months, or whenever I get one, then I think it would be quite cool to be using an Apple Extended Keyboard 2 from 1989 with an iPad.
I think Steve Jobs would feel a vibration in the force or something.
Yeah, there's actually a great story out there. I think it's... You could search for it, you can find it. It's a guy who took his Extended Keyboard to Steve Jobs and asked him to sign it. And Steve just said, this is everything that's wrong with Apple today, because he obviously left the company. This is everything that's wrong with Apple today. Why do you need all these keys? What the hell do you use the F1 key for? So then he actually pulled the F1 key off the keyboard there.
Neat.
So.
Well, I agree. I never learned how to use the F keys on the keyboard.
Really? You don't assign them to the services or anything? Expose?
The ones that are automatically labeled or whatever, and Expose on Mac OS X, you know, stuff like that, I know F9 is Expose, but the rest of them, I don't use.
That's nuts. You need to assign these keyboard shortcuts.
Hmm.
Find yourself some Apple scripts, Dave, and assign them to these keys.
Yeah. You know, one day I'd like to... I mean to dig into that, but, you know, when I have free time.
Yeah.
So, never. Right. Are you a reader of Ricardo Mori's System Folder blog, David?
You betcha. And
yes.
And I got in trouble last time I called someone out for something. Can I do that again? I called Grant out on his email. Can I call Vic out on something?
Yeah.
His RS...
Although I just want to say, the views and opinions expressed here do not reflect those of Dave Lawrence.
Well, they may do, because this is to do with his RSS feed, which is, to my horror, not a full content RSS feed.
It's truncated, yes, I agree.
Yeah, you need to fix that, Rick. And we're calling you out on this.
And before, he had a great blog header. It was the old,
yeah,
like, System 7 looking. Yeah, it looked great. And so I didn't mind going to his blog, but you're right. I wish his RSS feed was.
But anyway, back to your point.
Yeah, but anyway, he posted something today about Right Now, which was an old word processor for the classic Mac back in the day, and that got me thinking, because I've kind of been thinking that, like with Newton Poetry, I've kind of slacked on the Newton and Mac projects. Like, I haven't done a lot of hands-on stuff like I used to do. And so I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could do a week, like 7 straight days, of just using classic Macs for everything? Like, for web browsing, for writing, for any work I do. This is my idea. Yeah. I turn off my iMac, my Intel 21.5-inch iMac. I turn off my iBook G4, and I just use OS 9 and before Macs for a whole week. What would it be like?
I've often
could I do it?
That, because I still have my Mac OS 9 partition on this computer. And maybe 1 week when I don't have, you know, any schoolwork or whatever to do, then I would try that, because I think it would be an interesting experiment.
Yeah. Well, I'm really thinking about it, because I feel bad that some of my classroom Macs haven't gotten a lot of attention lately, and I thought this would be a great way to combine my PowerMac G3, which is running OS 8, my iMac G3, which is running OS 9, and then my LC520, which is running OS 7.6. What would be a way I could get all of them used in a week? And then I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I just used my iPhone for just phone calls and used a Newton for all my calendars and contacts and stuff?
Well, you can use your Newton for phone calls if you get the right PC card, you know.
Right. But I don't, you know, that sounds like an exercise in futility, and my girlfriend may get angry if I keep dropping calls on her. So I'm saving my relationship here. I just want to point that out. But even for portable, like, I could use my eMates if I needed to do some typing or some work on the go. And then I even thought, wouldn't it be fun if I got my Mac SE out and did some design work on it?
With Photoshop on a black and white screen.
Yes, yeah, and I've got the original PageMaker, the oldest PageMaker, speaking of PageMaker, and I've got the original Adobe Illustrator on there, too. So, you know, I could run my freelance projects right out of a little Mac SE.
You can just imagine what the colors are.
Right. I can have printers calling me up and yelling at me for sending a floppy disk in, and all the color profiles are wrong. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm kind of formulating a plan, and I'm gathering up some software, which is why I asked you for the BB Edit Lite, because I'd like a good,
well, you know,
solid text
editor. The BB Edit Lite does not have any syntax highlighting, you know that.
That's okay. Right, okay. I can live with that.
All right. Okay. Just so you know, don't get angry.
But Classzilla, you know, running Classzilla to do my web browsing, and I actually tried posting a post to Newton Poetry using that on my iMac G3, and it works fine.
Yeah, if you get the latest version of Flash for OS 9, which is Flash 7, you can watch YouTube in the Classzilla as well.
See there?
Yeah.
That's all I need. So, But anyway, it's an idea I'm running, and if you have any recommendations for software that you think I'd need, or games, or whatever. But you know, every morning I get up when I'm eating breakfast, and I read the web, and I update my blog, and things like that.
Is there an OSS for OS 9?
Ooh, that's a good one. And I wonder if, well, because I just use Google Reader, I'm wondering how Google Reader.
Yeah. Do you use NetNewsWire at all?
No, I don't.
Oh, you're missing out. You're missing it.
I'm not a big RSS guy. I just subscribe to a few blogs, one of yours included.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm not a big RSS reader. Every website I read regularly is subscribed to. Let me just get the 58 feeds I've got right now.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've got the...
Yep. See, some websites, I like the look of them so much.
Simple Bits, Boing Boing. Yeah.
And Tumblr has become kind of an RSS reader to me, too, because I follow quite a few blogs on that.
Yeah.
And I can like them and reblog them.
Mm.
So, but anyway, this is my, and I thought of calling it, like, 7 days of System 7 or something like that. But I would document everything and any difficulties I had, and of course I'd do a full write-up on it on newtonpoetry.com.
Yeah. Would you,
but I think it'd be fun.
Do you remember back in January that retro challenge thing? Which,
yes.
Morgan Aldridge, is that how you put Aldridge? Mispronouncing his name, but he did the thing with the U-Mate where he just used that for a month.
Right. Now, a month may be pushing it, but... and then I thought, well, you know, what about podcasts and things like that? But I think I can go without those for a week and just use my iPhone just for the phone, nothing else.
We seem to be linking everything together in this podcast. Going back to Audion... Audion, the MP3 player that Transmit used to do... that Panic used to develop. My brain is... Yeah. It's 11:30 on a 3-day weekend. So, anyway. The audio on the MP3 player that Panic used to develop. You can listen to your podcast with that, and that's great. And it really is an amazing app. It had... on OS 9, it had the transparency in the windows, all the sorts of things that, you know, were dreams of user interface developers back in the OS 9 days. But to us, to say, no big deal with us for Quartz in Mac OS 10.
Is that still available?
Yeah, you can download it for free.
Oh,
one of the ones they released for free.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out. That'd be a nice addition to the 7 days of System 7.
Yeah.
Well, neat. Gosh, David, anything else?
Well, there's WWDC coming up.
that's the British version for listeners that are wondering. That's what they call it over the pond.
WWDC.
No, DC.
Yeah.
Maybe that's Scottish. I don't know.
Yeah. Sorry.
But the beginning of June, WWDC is coming up.
Yeah.
And no Mac awards.
No Mac Apple Design Awards. No. And I'm not that surprised, really. I mean, the word on the street is that, you know, WWDC 2011 will be the one that's Mac-oriented. It's just that
really?
This year being the iPad launch, they want to really get in with the iPad.
Yeah. Well, you twittered, last week, I think, that anybody who wonders at the health of the Mac ecosystem because of this no Apple Design Awards for Mac software... is a fool. I think that's what you said. They're a fool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I am that fool. I really took it to heart. I have just been feeling it, and that didn't help my mood at all. And then you started calling me names, and man, it was just a rough week. But after a week's distance, like after thinking about it for a while, and especially after seeing the Apple earnings, like they're still making a bunch of money off Macintoshes, and that makes me feel kind of good.
Well, you know, 28 days for a million sold, it's looking good for the iPad.
Yeah, it sure is. So, and then, you know, that got me kind of wondering what if a Mac OS 11 comes out, you know, is there going to be such a thing? Is there going to be the Macintosh around when it comes out?
No.
Or is it just going to be a combined OS?
I do not doubt that the iPad will replace the Mac, but not yet. Last time Steve tried to kill off an obsolete product too quickly, we all know where that landed him.
Out of a job.
Next Computer Inc.
Yep. But then I, you know, you, and it's all in the future. We have no idea what's coming, but I, you know, I just wonder how you get non-Mac work.
I mean, somewhere, somebody at Apple said that Apple has the next 20 years of their future planned out ahead. And somewhere on that 20-year timeline, there is a point that says, last Macintosh computer sold.
Right. Which I think would put us in a great position, because here we are collecting older Macintoshes.
Yeah. I mean, we'd be like the Apple II people are today. We'd real. Oh, back in the old days with our 700 megabyte CD-ROMs.
Right. Or, you know, iPhone users, whenever they kill that off, they'll be like the Newton folks, carrying the torch. No, it's nice to see them getting so much success, but you know, change is always hard. It's like liking a band and then they get famous, and you know, you look back on the glory days when you liked them before anybody liked them. You know, I came into the Macintosh just as the Intel era was coming around, and that's kind of when the Macintosh took off. So I, you know, it's kind of bittersweet seeing the Mac do so well, or Apple doing so well.
You know, I wonder about that. What relevance their switch to Intel had to their sudden gain in market share. I think it might have a lot to do with it. Because even though it's ridiculous to say that it will be more compatible with Windows, that people will think, oh, it's got an Intel processor in it, it must be more compatible with the Microsoft.
Right. Well, and you can run Windows on it, you know, which I think helped for some people.
You could do that before if you got the virtual PC.
That's true. But, I mean, you know, full system, boot camp, Windows on your Mac. But, yeah, because the market share hasn't changed all that much by pure numbers. But personal, like, you have businesses buying up a bunch of PCs in big numbers. But then you have, like, you and I as individuals, and more of those individuals are buying Macintoshes, which
One of my good friends bought a Macintosh just this weekend, switched.
Right.
And
you know, we're only two people and we only know so many people, but there's stories of, you know, more people coming into Apple stores, more college students leaving with Macintoshes.
Well, most popular notebook on college campuses, isn't that?
Right.
The MacBook?
Yep. So yeah, the last couple of years have been great to see. But then, you know, for guys like me who love the Mac, who, you know, the Mac is the reason why I care so much about Apple. It just makes me nervous.
So
I kiss my Mac every night before I go to bed. You know, because it may be the last time.
Yeah.
You're gonna cut that out, right?
No, this is all staying. This is staying in.
Okay. That's all right. Okay.
DC is going in, but that's staying in.
See, you come back from Scotland and you've got this new accent. I can't figure it out.
Oh, dear. So, yeah.
I know we're both speaking English, but this is getting tough, David.
Yeah, we were talking about switches. That's, I know two of my good friends then have switched to the Mac, because the person, our friends who went to But we went to Scotland with me and my family. We went with some friends up to Glasgow for the weekend. They mm-hmm. just switch.
Neat.
So, yeah.
Well, fun.
One switcher at a time.
That's right. It's like a virus.
Yeah.
Well, anything else on the agenda, sir?
Do we want to get into this stuff about the Gizmodo iPhone? Or thoughts on
Flash?
No.
I think enough has been said about it.
Alright. I think there's still... Yeah, I agree with you on the enough's been said about the Gizmodo. What about thoughts on Flash? I think there's still stuff to be said about that.
It's interesting to me reading the opposite opinion. Like, people who don't support Apple so much, who do support Flash, hearing their opinions about...
Mm.
And it seems to stem around, like, Apple's a dictatorship, or Apple's pushing their own agenda on people, Apple this, Apple that, when it seems to me that getting to a more open and standards-based internet should be the goal.
Here's the way I see it, Dave. In 1997, there was no way that HTML could do anything near a completely interactive experience. No way.
Mm-hmm.
That's the environment that Flash was born into. Here today, in 2010, I was about to say 2009, it's May, I'm still saying 2009. Here today, in 2010, we do... HTML5 and CSS3 give us more than enough to, you know, create that full experience using completely open standards.
Right. It's almost like a programming language now. Like, you know, you can pretty much write software on HTML now.
Yeah. Well.
With JavaScript and CSS and, you know.
Yeah. We're not quite yet, I wouldn't say. But very soon.
But it's getting there.
We're getting there, yeah. With the new HTML5 feature where JavaScript will be able to save things to your disk and cache everything using HTML5, that will definitely change everything's. Suddenly, applications which previously required a huge back-end infrastructure will suddenly just start being static HTML pages with, like, JavaScript.
Right.
This
And the thing about Steve Jobs' open letter to Flash or whatever is that, you know, he kind of chastises Adobe for not updating Flash to be, you know, run smoothly on lower RAM, lower CPU, not be a battery hog, that kind of thing. And I think that speaks to Adobe in general. I think a lot of their stuff is getting so big and so bloated that, you know, it's almost not much fun to use Photoshop anymore or Acrobat or Illustrator or any of these. I mean, it's just, they're kind of becoming the Microsoft in that they're so big and they write the software that can do just about everything that it hardly does anything.
Mm.
Well, it's neat to think of the history that these two companies have had together.
Mm.
I mean, Photoshop and Illustrator and PostScript. I mean, think of the modern desktop publishing system. It started with, you know, a classic Mac and a LaserWriter and PostScript.
Mm. And it was actually the LaserWriter's anniversary recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing to think that it was once the most powerful computer in Apple's lineup.
A printer.
Yeah. If you could.
Well, I thought
could
that the other day.
PostScript, then it was great. If you. Because PostScript is a programming language.
Right.
You can do proper, you know, algorithms with it and everything. It's not just, you know, text and pictures.
Yeah. Well, that kind of holds true still today. I've got an HP banner printer at work. It prints pieces of paper that are 3 feet wide and up to like 10 feet long, and it had when we bought it new, it had more RAM on it on the printer than my computer did at my desk.
Mm.
So, but anyway, it's been it's been quite the fight, mm-hmm. and you almost feel like Apple doesn't have to worry about Microsoft anymore. It has to worry about Adobe and Google and a couple other of these companies.
Hmm. Yeah. I actually found for a while back in 2005, 2006, right after I got my first iPod, my iPod hard drive was actually bigger than the hard drive in my computer.
Yeah.
And I actually rediscovered the hard drive that my iPad was bigger than the hard drive that I had back then. And it was just lying around, and it's now serving as a backup drive for this very podcast. So all our episodes are backed up onto this hard drive.
Cool. I like that, you know, with your Power Mac, you could throw a couple of hard drives in there, and that's what I like about the Power Macs, is mm-hmm. that you could have some redundancy and backup.
Through my FireWire enclosure. But, yeah, I see where you're coming from. I was looking at SATA cards to put, like, terabyte drive in here and whatever, and no. I'll just stick with this 80 gigabyte one. And
now, my Power Mac, which is the graphite one, the Yikes model, has a limit on how big the hard drive can be.
Right.
I forget what it is, but I think it's like 80 gigs or 120 gigs.
Yeah, 128 gigabytes, the large drive support thing.
Right.
Yeah, this one
so
has
that's
it
all
too.
I can
this
go.
Is like this is the literally the last model where it had that limitation.
Yeah.
But.
Well, neat. Well, so now you've got this Power Mac G4. You know, what's going to be the update model? Are you looking for anything else out there?
Not really. This is plenty powerful enough.
So you're happy with it?
Yeah. And you know, I can if it does could start to, you know, if I do get frustrated with anything that's being slow, I can just piecemeal it, get a processor upgrade or some more RAM or whatever separately.
Yeah.
A new graphics card.
That's the other thing I like about those Power Macs is that you can tinker a lot with them and upgrade them a lot.
With the secret side door.
Right. That's a lot of fun.
Mm.
Anything else, sir? iPad, you gonna get one when it comes out?
Not right after it comes out. Maybe 2 or 3 months later.
Hmm.
I hope
you'll have one before. You'll have one before
yeah,
I do.
Then. I'm changing school. We talked about this before. I'm changing school this September. Moving to the higher section of my school, which so I want a computer to carry around there. So I'm going to get my
right.
iPad. I'll probably be the only guy there with one.
I think that's appropriate. You should be the guy there with one.
Yeah. Get that. Bring my Apple Extended Keyboard too with me in my bag.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, we want to apologize. It's been a while since our last podcast.
Yeah, we've been having some technical difficulties and problems. So hopefully we can release this episode 9. Right.
Right.
We're not
episode
just
9.
Another hour or so recording.
Don't even say it.
No. So,
but we do look forward to future podcasts when we'll talk about our floating stripper idea. Strip club.
Yeah.
Floating strip club.
Yeah. And that reminds me, I do need to repeat this bit of our new financial arrangement.
Go right ahead.
So, we accepted a sponsor once, and great though that was, it doesn't really suit our podcast. There's not many companies making software and deliberately making and selling software for all the Macintoshes. So what we're doing now is we're going to start accepting your donations, and this isn't going to be we're not going to pester you for your money, we're just going to at the end of each episode, 2 or 3 words, you know, well, more than 2 or 3 words, maybe a sentence or two, just please donate to our show, it helps us make it better, whatever. So, you know, these podcasts don't host themselves, and we'd be glad for your support on that.
Right. and we're going to start fresh the David Kendall iPad fund. So you can contribute that with a line item on your check or donation.
Well, I was thinking with this, the iPhone OS 4, you know, with the multitasking, I might be able to record episodes on the iPad, which would make it a show-related expense.
Yeah, that's true. Great. Okay, well, look to our website, helloshow.net.
Email us.
And you can
podcast at helloshow.net and donate to us via PayPal at the same address.
Twitter, you can find us on Twitter.
At hellopodcast.
We'd love to hear from you. Any feedback you have or anything we got wrong?
Oh, one last thing. A request for UK-based listeners only, I think. I'm looking for an ITV 400 box from Elgato for Donald. They're very hard to come across on eBay, but they seem to be the only TV tuner I can find that will work on a G3 Mac properly. So please, if you have one of these, I would be willing to buy it off you. For monies. So I'll edit that back into the main bit of the show.
Right.
So
great.
So
all right. Well, you can find me, Dave Lawrence, at newtonpoetry.com.
You can find me, David Kendall, at dpk.org.uk. And you can find my upcoming Breakfast Enthusiast social network at toastwaffle.com.
Yes.
It's just a coming soon page. Don't go there.
No, do go there and screenshot it just so we can remember.
Yeah, it is actually quite a slick coming soon page. I think
I like it. I can't wait to see what you come up with.
The CSS rotate transform.
Right.
All right. So this has been the Hello Show. Thank you for listening. Tune in next time.
See ya.